It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
It has been a big week for news across the world of minor league baseball as we welcome you into this week's edition of the Show Before the Show podcast from MILB.com. Hi, everybody. I'm Tyler Mond. Sam Dykstra is in New York City for episode number 73. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Tyler.
It's a crazy week.
Yeah, this is a very busy week. It's going to be dominated with this talk of realignment. I mean, it may be one of the biggest things that happened in minor league baseball since I've been here, which is this and now my fifth season. And just in terms of the landscape of an entire level just gets completely changed.
I mean,
we've talked, to Ben, we've talked amongst ourselves, all that kind of stuff about relocation, teams moving, all this kind of stuff. This is not only two teams moving, relocating, but also two leagues completely changing, affiliations changing. There's just so many moving parts to this that we're going to talk a lot about it with a lot of different people today.
We'll get into the details of it here in just a moment. Before we do, you can find the Show Before the Show podcast, the Minor League Baseball podcast, on iTunes and on the Stitcher app. Now, we've been there for a few weeks, so if you get your podcast through Stitcher, you can find us there. We're on Twitter as well. Sam is at Sam Dykstra, MILB, and I am at Tyler Mond. And, of course, Minor League Baseball is at MILB. You can get in touch with the show there. You can get in touch with the show by emailing us, podcast@MILB.com. And if you find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, wherever else you get your podcast, give us a rating and a review and a subscription, and we would be ever so grateful. So let's get started on this conversation. Three strikes, we're going to open with just some details of what's going on before we get into three strikes. So in case you've missed it, in case you've been focused on major league games as of the last week or so, here is the official word from Minor League Baseball. And this came down 2 days ago. We're recording this on Wednesday the 24th. On Monday, we got this release from Minor League Baseball. Quote, Minor League Baseball today announced that the Class A Advanced Carolina League will add two teams for the 2017 season as part of a broader realignment at that level of play. The California League's Bakersfield Blaze and High Desert Mavericks will cease operations at the completion of the 2016 season. The 2017 season will see a return of professional baseball to Kinston, North Carolina. Kinston served as the home of Carolina League clubs from 1956 to 1957, 62 to 74, and 78 through 2011. Several locations are under consideration for the second Carolina League club, with Fayetteville, North Carolina having made steady progress toward a stadium that would see play beginning with the 2019 season. Fayetteville served as home of a Carolina League club from 1950 to 1956 and as the home of a South Atlantic League club from 1987 through 2000. Those are the bare bones details. And like Sam said, we're going to talk a lot about this on the show today. Dan Bespris, who is the radio voice of the Bakersfield Blaze, will join the show coming up in just a little bit. Our own Benjamin Hill, obviously, who's been covering the business side of this move, will join the show. But really, like you said a minute ago, Sam, this is one of the biggest stories since either of us has been involved in minor league baseball. My time actually goes back to the Carolina League. I started in the minors in 2009, but with the site now 3 years, you've been with the site 5 years. This is huge. I mean, this could theoretically, you could make the argument this is the biggest franchise involved news item since the dissolution of the American Association in the 90s, in which AAA switched to two leagues instead of three leagues. It's massive, though. We don't see contraction. We don't see realignment the way that this is happening virtually ever.
Right. And what makes it so interesting, for this podcast purpose, for our site purposes, just for minor league talking purposes, is that there's so much to sink your teeth into here. I mean, not only are two teams leaving, so we're going to talk to Dan Bespris, and he's going to give you the perspective of somebody who's working in a front office in which, in a month won't exist anymore. I mean, so what is that process like? What is the process of, two front offices, two organizations, two clubs ceasing operations completely? Then from the other side, what is the operation, like when two clubs are growing organically? We have the club in Kinston that's going to be using a past ballpark, but Fayetteville, potentially, you know, there's other discussions of other cities in North Carolina. You know, how is that going to grow? So we have that point of view. What is going to happen to the California League? What's going to happen to the Carolina League? What happens to the players? I mean, we're talking about the Rangers changing their Class A advanced affiliates. What does that mean, you know, for Rangers prospects going forward who don't have to play, you know, in the extreme hitters park that is, you know, High Desert's Maverick Stadium? You know, there's just so many different angles to come at this from. Ben later will talk about the business point of view and the ballpark point of view. That's what makes it so interesting for us. I mean, we'll dig into that a lot today. But, you know, I think our job here in the beginning is just to focus on the baseball aspect. You know, what is this going to mean for the prospects? And, you know, as I kind of touched on, you know, getting out of High Desert, you know, is not – I think any team that had been affiliated with High Desert in the past, you know, it used to be the Mariners, now it's the Rangers. Nobody particularly wanted to be there just because it's such an extreme hitters park. I ran some park factors today for the 2016 season. When one is neutral, High Desert had a home run factor of 1.5, which means you're 50% more likely to hit a home run in High Desert than you are in a normal, completely hitting neutral, pitching neutral ballpark. Run factor was 1.3, meaning you're 30% more likely. So it's really tough to pitch in that type of environment. You know, you talk to a lot of pitchers who say, you know, you're worried that anytime you see a fly ball go over your head, there's a chance it could get out. You know, what does that do for pitcher's confidence? They're going to be moving to Kinston, which, you know, they'll be moving into Granger Stadium, which hasn't been used since 2011. But because it is a minor league stadium that has been used before, we could run the park factors for that. It's much more pitching friendly. It's got a run factor of 0.9. It's got a home run factor of 0.85. So that's still below average. So that's going to be crazy if you were a guy, you know, a Rangers prospect pitching at High Desert in 2016, going to Kinston in 2017. But it is at least much more neutral. You know, it might be more pitching friendly, but it's certainly more neutral. And that could I know the Rangers will be happy to see that. That'll make, you know, their pitchers more confident that they can pitch and not worried about the ballpark affecting things. That won't affect, you know, their hitting prospects, you know, approaches. It, you know, as much as you want to tell kids, or, you know, not kids, but the younger players, hey, it's easy to hit a home run here. I really need you to try not to do that. I want you to make solid contact. You know, they're going to want to get it up in the wind and see how far the ball can travel. So taking that out of the equation should help Rangers prospects going forward. A lot more to talk about with this, but that's what I just kind of want to touch on now, is that it's going to be really interesting to see what's going to happen to Rangers prospects who are no longer, you know, having to play in such an extreme environment in High Desert, you know, and go into a much more neutral place in Kinston.
Kinston, North Carolina will be the home for one of those clubs. Fayetteville looks as if it will eventually be the home for the second of those clubs. Looks as if the Houston Astros will be the parent club of that team. The Texas Rangers will be the parent club of the team that's moving into Kinston. There's actually already a site set up at MILB.com. KinstonBaseball.com has some of the details on this new club. But yeah, if you're looking for the nitty gritty on what it could mean on the field, Sam's story is outstanding. It's on the site right now, the Toolshed column for what this could mean for Rangers prospects as they take the field at historic Granger Stadium in Kinston, North Carolina, coming up for the 2017 season. Again, all kinds of conversation coming up on this show today about realignment, what it will mean for Kinston, what it could mean for Fayetteville, and what it does mean in very concrete terms for guys like Dan Bespris and the people that he works with in the front office in Bakersfield, also in High Desert. A ton more about that coming up on the show today. But, you know, I think we're all well served to keep in mind, this is really exciting for Kinston, really exciting for Fayetteville. I used to work in the Carolina League, love Granger Stadium, love that little town in Kinston, North Carolina. It's a great place. It's a very classically minor league market. But on the flip side of that, a cornerstone team in the California League, the Bakersfield Blaze, which has been in that league since 1941 in various incarnations, is going to be gone. The High Desert Mavericks are going to be gone. You know, that's a lot of summer nights without ball games. It's a lot of people in those front offices who are going to be looking for new stuff to do in 2017. So be excited for the new markets, the new teams, the new fans, but also take a minute to, you know, recognize that this is tough on a lot of people as well. We certainly don't take that lightly. The contraction in California, expansion of the Carolina League, and minor league baseball continues on with a new chapter for 2017.
Yeah, no, thank you for pointing that out. I mean, that's the thing, is that you want to take the story and run with it so quickly and just say, what does this all mean? What are we going to be talking about next April? And, you know, you try to get into that and you want to acknowledge that as well. But there are real, you know, people involved here who are losing jobs, don't quite know, you know, what is next, what's beyond the horizon, what's beyond the last regular season game of the year, or potentially the last playoff game of the year. I think Dan, you know, we already talked to him, so I can tease it out a little bit. Dan gets into that of just, you know, some people might be moving to new gigs within, you know, the ownership group at Bakersfield, but, you know, a lot of people are going to be searching for new jobs, and that's kind of tough. So you just have to band together. You know, there's a lot of perspectives here, and we don't want to leave any out. So, you know, to those losing, you know, opportunities in High Desert and Bakersfield, we're certainly thinking of you at this time and, you know, hoping all the best from here on out. You know, the people in those organizations did a really good job of keeping teams together that, you know, at times were tough to keep together. And the fact that they lasted this long is a testament to those folks as well.
Strike two this week, Sam. We will we'll take it back on the field with the Los Angeles Dodgers and their number two prospect, Jose De Leon, who has been nothing short of ridiculous over his last couple of times out. Last two starts for Jose De Leon, 7 innings pitched in each, 7 combined hits, 2 runs, 20 strikeouts, 0 walks. What's gotten into Jose De Leon? We've talked about him in pretty large stretches this season. We talked about him most notably a couple of weeks ago as to being maybe one of those guys who comes up and impacts a major league pennant race, because I think that's very much a distinct possibility for him. But he has been so good his last couple of times out.
Yeah, and the fact that he's been so good at this time is really interesting to me, just because, you know, when you talk about the Dodgers, they are certainly surging right now in the NL West, but they you know, they have some pitching issues in that they're really struggling to keep guys healthy. You know, when I wrote this tool shed on them last week, they had 6 guys on the DL who were starting pitchers, and Rich Hill, Clayton Kershaw, Brandon McCarthy, Bud Norris, Ryu, and Alex Wood. And then they add another. I think Brett Anderson is now on the DL. Rich Hill's come off the DL, but then Scott Kazmir has an issue. I mean, they have so many problems in terms of starting pitching, and De Leon's doing this at a time when, you know, he said himself, like, every start I make, feel, you know, I want it to be an audition. I want it to be to show the big club that I'm ready for the majors. You know, I talked to him last week after a start, and he said Andrew Friedman, you know, Dodgers president of baseball operations, was there to watch him. So it almost literally was an audition. He had struck out 10 batters over 7 innings pitched in that one. And then I know you talked to him this week, I think, when he had only given up the 1 hit over 7 innings while striking out 10 guys.
Yeah.
You know, when I talked to him, he talked about a little bit of an adjustment in terms of, you know, he was doing a bullpen and the sun was getting in his eyes and he had never had that happen before. So he kind of adjusted his hat, lowered it a little bit just so he could actually focus on the target. And what that did is it almost created like a tunnel effect. At least that's what I got from it. It made him focus on what was in front of him, you know, what the target he was trying to hit. And it made him just get lower and throw harder and, you know, line everything up so much better. And then he goes out and has an immaculate inning in the first inning, you know, 9 pitches, 9 strikes, 3 strikeouts. And he's like, something's clicked here. And then he mentioned to me that he was trying to do a better job of this deception with the ball. You know, he would flash the ball behind his back a little bit. He actually said behind his butt. That was a direct quote, which I thought was so cute and hilarious. But, you know, he would flash the ball a little bit behind his butt, so it was easier to follow. So that was something he was working on. And then reading your story, Tyler, it sounded like he had achieved that in his last start at New Orleans. So it sounds like he's making these little adjustments that are just making it so much harder to follow him at the AAA level. Add on top of that, he's only thrown 78 and two-thirds innings this year. So he's got plenty left in the tank. He had some injuries early in the year, seems to be coming back fully fit from those. Has tossed 7 innings, you know, 3 starts in a row. This is really intriguing. You have to think the Dodgers would love to have him at the major league level right now. He's not on the 40-man, so they would have to make some moves. But, you know, down the stretch, they're trying to fend off the Giants. You would think De Leon could get at least a couple starts, maybe in September when rosters expand.
Jose De Leon, really, really good. When you look at his numbers just season long, he has been ridiculous. He's basically had two bad days. One of them especially was against New Orleans back on July 25th. Gave up 7 runs on 8 hits in an inning and a third. And his last start, the start after which I talked to him, was against New Orleans. And he said, I knew last time I came out against these guys, they killed me. And I wanted to make sure that I showed them that I had adjusted to that. But yeah, similarly, the discussion of really what he continued to hit on was aggressiveness. He wanted to make sure that he was aggressive going to the plate. He discovered in those bullpens, and again, like he told Sam, it was after Andrew Friedman was in attendance for one of his starts, he discovered how well he was hiding the ball in his bullpen sessions when he was kind of taking it, getting a sign, and going with an aggressive delivery. It was really interesting, and that's one of the things I've really, for a long time, wanted to talk to Jose De Leon, because he's so open in his interviews and discusses so clearly what he feels like is contributing to his success. And that was the first time I think I'd ever actually gotten a chance to interview him. And it was fascinating hearing him be so frank and upfront about, no, I discovered this about how I can do this, and that led to this part of my success. He's one of those really easy guys to cheer for. And big congratulations to him on a solid role. Oklahoma City fighting for a postseason spot, and also Los Angeles Dodgers doing the same. So don't be surprised if you hear that name at the major league level coming up very, very soon. Strike three this week, Sam. We're already getting to end of season all-star lists that are rolling out throughout the minor leagues, which is crazy that we're this close. We're like 10 days away from the close of the minor league regular season. Give me some of your initial takes on these.
Yeah, so the ones that kind of popped out to me would have been surprises, I guess, the beginning of the year, but aren't so much now. Now it just feels matter of fact. And that's in the Midwest League and the Appy League. I think California came out today, and a couple more will come out as the week progresses. So by the time you've heard this, check the site, see who else has been named an end of season all-star. Starting in the Midwest League, Eloy Jimenez, began the year as the number 10 prospect in the Cubs system. Was a guy who was signed out of the Dominican Republic a couple of years ago, had hit .284 with a .746 OPS last year in short season ball at Eugene. A nice prospect, but not anybody you would expect to tear the world apart. Then this year comes in at Class A South Bend, making his full season debut. He's now the Midwest League, not only MVP, but also prospect of the year, easily a top 100 prospect, easily a top 50 prospect, got invited to the Midwest League All-Star game where he was the top star there. Certainly had a case for MVP at the Futures game in San Diego, despite being a guy who had only played at Class A ball. Hit a home run there. I think he went 2-for-3 with 4 RBIs. As of right now, season's not over, but he's hitting .335 with 13 homers, 3 triples, 38 doubles, and a .911 OPS. We talked before, this guy seems like a breakout prospect of the year candidate, gets rewarded in the Midwest League. Kind of cool to see, how he's built himself through this year. I know his manager in South Bend has talked about, you could see the confidence building when he would start to get the little awards, the invite to the All-Star game, then the invite to the Futures game, and how he just took those opportunities and ran with them. So what is going to be the next step from here? Now he's a league MVP. Now he's a league top prospect. What does that mean for him going forward? Is he as confident as he's ever been, or is he going to sit on his laurels? Hopefully, that won't be the case, but that's kind of interesting. And I'll move over to the Appy League. Alex Kirilloff, Twins first round prospect this year. He was named the top player in the Appy League this year. As of Wednesday, he's hitting .320 with an .802 OPS, 6 homers, 9 doubles, and 29 RBIs in 50 games for Elizabethton. This was a guy when the Twins took him in the first round. I remember doing the write up, and it just, he's not a guy that screams, here's my loud tool. Here's what I do really, really well, better than anybody else. But all 5 of his tools grade out as average to slightly above average. I mean, this is a guy, he's going to play you a solid outfield. He's got some decent speed, not, 20 stolen bases, not that kind of thing, but he's not going to be a base running asset or a problem on the base paths, I should say. But he's going to hit well. He's going to hit for a little bit of power, as we've seen this year. Again, .320 average, 6 homers. So, when you put all those package of tools together, that's what you get, is this type of season that he's put together in rookie level ball. Now we have to see what's going to happen to him next year, potentially looking at starting at the Class A level, getting a full season in him. How is he going to be able to handle that? How is he going to handle a little bit more advanced pitching? Between Jimenez and Kirilloff, I I definitely leave 2016 more impressed with them than I was at the beginning of the year, and that was even before they got these awards.
So those are coming out all across the minor leagues in the upcoming couple of weeks as we steam ahead toward the minor league postseason, which starts just after Labor Day all across this great land of ours. And one of the teams that could be headed there is a team who will be playing on borrowed time if it gets to that stage, but could be a very, very cool story. The Bakersfield Blaze, who have been front and center in the news spinning carousel of minor league baseball as of this week, the Bakersfield Blaze, along with the High Desert Mavericks, will cease operations at the conclusion of the 2016 season, but could well be headed to the postseason, and that could provide a little bit more of fuel to the fire, which is a terrible pun, obviously, given that the team is named the Blaze, but this finish to 2016 could be really cool. High Desert's already headed to the playoffs. We'll see if Bakersfield will join them, but the big conversation coming up with Dan Bespris of the Bakersfield Blaze discusses the close of this franchise for 2017 and beyond, what it means for him, what it means for the front office, what it means for Bakersfield and baseball in that city, and we kind of get the perspective from the other side of this whole conversation of contraction and expansion in two Class A advanced leagues in the California and Carolina League and Minor League Baseball. And Dan Bespris joins the show coming up to talk about all that and more next. And for this week's conversation, the Show Before the Show podcast heads to Bakersfield, California, which is on its way out as a minor league market as of right now. And we welcome in Dan Bespris, who is the radio voice, longtime radio voice of the Bakersfield Blaze, currently the Class A advanced affiliate of the Seattle Mariners. And Dan, obviously not an easy week, not an easy stretch for you guys, but welcome and thanks a ton for joining us. What is the current state in the front office? I mean, not a real easy few days, I would imagine, to come to work. But at the same time, you know, you guys are kind of all going through this together, and I would imagine there's a little bit of comfort in that. What's it been like for the last few days?
Yeah, I mean, you sort of answered your own question with that one. It's spot on. It's been an incredibly difficult week, and hello, by the way, to everyone.
By the way, Dan is the best sounding guest we've ever had. He's using the radio broadcast equipment. Sounds phenomenal. It's like he's sitting next to us. I like it.
Well, maybe I am sitting next to you. Have you each checked over your right shoulders? This is something where, having been here for 6 years now, which in minor league ball is kind of an eternity, I think I've been a part of four different departure rumors just in 6 years. So at some point, you become a little bit numb to the idea that it will actually happen someday. I mean, I figured it would happen 2035 or something like that, and I'd be long gone, whether that's elsewhere or dead. And at that point, you pass along all the knowledge and everything that we put together here, but it really happened. I mean, it happened. We on staff had about a very short warning before the official press release came out, but we did know beforehand. And it stings. I mean, it cuts really deep. And for me personally, I mean, my time in Bakersfield probably was not going to be that much longer, whether it was this year or next or a couple of years down the line. So it's not necessarily the fact that I'm not going to have something to do in Bakersfield next season. For me, it's much more about all the time that we've all here put into this stadium to kind of keep it together, to tie it up with string and duct tape, and to do our best 2,000 hours, whatever it is, over the season to make it fun and to make it interesting. And I just really hope that everybody, not only here locally, but across the nation, kind of remembers the staff that held it together as long as we did. But at the end of the day, you know, they had two decades to try to figure out how to get this place figured out, and it didn't happen. So, you know, you knew this day would come eventually. You just hope that it wouldn't be immediate. And that's where we sit right now. A lot of sad faces and a lot of kind of trying to put on a good show, our last homestand, but really nothing else you can do right now but just try to make the last few home games memorable.
And you mentioned a little bit of the community and, you know, Bakersfield itself as a city, as a region. I mean, what has the reaction been, you know, outside the stadium, outside the front office to all of this? You know, what kind of words are you guys getting from people in the community or, you know, like I said, outside the organization?
The response has actually been fantastic in terms at least of our personal pride for those of us on the front office staff, because it's been almost unilaterally, wow, you guys, you know, you really worked your tails off. We saw the front office busting their humps in a kind of an unwinnable situation at times. But there's also frustration with whether it's other people kind of calling each other out in town. Hey, why didn't you go to more ball games? Or calling out the county for not building something new. That it's a lot of kind of initial finger pointing, I think, where that to some degree is just human nature. You want to try to blame somebody when something bad happens. But again, it's there's blame to go around. Pretty much anywhere you point a finger, wherever you're pointing, there's probably some measure of guilt that you could find in that direction. And to me, that's not even the most important part right now. But the people of the town have been awesome. They've supported us in a big way on social media so far. And I know when the news broke, I got text messages from former colleagues, former employees of other teams in the California League, season ticket holders, and almost everybody that I'd met in my time out here has tried to contact me in some way to kind of say, hey, we're thinking about you. We know this is a hard time. You guys did everything you could, and we'll miss you. And really, maybe one out of about 200 or 300 responses was good riddance to bad rubbish. And frankly, if we can keep that to a 1 or 2% or less, then I think we did a pretty good job here the last couple of years, and we're awfully proud of that.
Yeah, I think if you can keep any internet response to 99% positive,
you have broken the internet.
That's a good success rate.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's that old phenomenon where people don't realize what they had until it's gone. And the song is way too apt, so I don't even want to bring it up. But I think that's what's happening, is that these people realize they had something special, and now it's going away, and there's nothing that any of us can do about it. The decision was made final by minor league baseball, and now they're upset, and they're mad that maybe they didn't take a better advantage of it, but they are thankful for what they got from the front office, from the players, and that's kind of that's heartwarming to know that at the root of all of that, it is kind of a love for baseball. So that part has been pretty cool.
And one thing I wanted to touch on, you mentioned, you know, kind of keeping the organization together with, you know, paper clips, duct tape, whatever. Sam Lynn Ballpark in particular, you know, an historic park, goes back to 1941. You know, what is the state of that park? What have you guys had to do with that structure? You know, just as a place that stood that long, what have you guys had to do to keep it going this long? And, you know, what is the next step for that ballpark?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to overstep my bounds and say that this is the hardest ballpark in the world to work at, but I got to believe we're top 10. You know, this is an old facility where it hasn't really had a ton of things done to it to make it an easier place to work. As just kind of a quick example that you can extrapolate to other parts, other facets of a day at the office, we still use an internet and phone provider known as TW Telecom, which I think was a Time Warner communications branch that basically doesn't exist anymore outside of some very rare scenarios. AT&T does not reach our stadium. Local Bright House Cable does not reach our stadium. We're set in an area where they would have had to dig a subterranean hole about a quarter of a mile from the nearest branch point. So we've been operating, you know, the whole front office and the clubhouse on a T1 line, which I know I'm sort of adjusting my bifocals as I say that, but as a point of reference, that was the big thing in 2001. That's 15 years ago now, and that's still what we're using out here. So that's not, you know, to poke fun at the stadium. That's just to kind of point out that everything here is 15 years harder than it should be, and it's mind-bogglingly frustrating at times. But at the end of it, I don't know if I can really express adequately that sense of pride and that sense of relief when you actually make it work. When you build this thing out of the duct tape that we were talking about and the paper clips, and it works, and it was so hard, and nobody thought that it would, and then you made it work anyway. And that to me is a microcosm of Sam Lynn ballpark. Outside of all the other things, everything, by the way, that anybody listening has heard is probably true. And it's just amazing. I hope anybody that wants to can still take this week to come out and see the place.
Everybody's favorite anecdote about Sam Lynn, of course, is that the Blaze start home games a lot of time during the summer at 7:45 at night, because the architects of Sam Lynn Ballpark back in the 40s thought that placing a ballpark that faced directly west would not be a bad idea. And I guess when you weren't playing that many night games, exactly, it's really not that troublesome.
Yeah, you know, every one of the weird stories out here has some goofy explanation behind it, with the possible exception of the fact that the dugouts only hold about 8 people. I still can't figure out why they did that. But, you know, we had the old fairgrounds out here, and the stands were already set up, and so they just sort of plopped a ballpark into it. And you can't rotate it 180 degrees. That's something that people have talked about. You'd actually have to physically move it farther away from the Kern River, or seats would not be on a firm enough ground. So, you know, they built it in the 40s. They played day games, and as they started to go to night games, they either started before or well after sunset. And only recently has it become a much bigger issue where, you know, everybody has to be home promptly at 9:45 and then in bed by 10. And yeah, in the summertime, most people only get to see about 5.5 innings of Blaze baseball.
Sam Lynn Ballpark is one of the longest tenured facilities in minor league baseball, and is a facility that we'll be saying goodbye to as a California League ballpark, and the Cal League moving to 8 teams, which is something that it has not been in its incarnation since the late 1970s. But what I think runs the risk of being lost in all this a lot of the time is the impact that it has on people like Dan and the front office members around him and around the front office of the High Desert Mavericks, because those are the people that it affects most. It'll affect the fans, but even players, coaches, they'll move on. They'll play in Kinston. They'll play in Fayetteville, wherever it is. But for front office staff members, when you're there at 8:00 in the morning every day and you leave at midnight and you do that for 8 days straight in an 8-game homestand, and as Dan said, you're putting things together with spit and bubble gum and duct tape and paper clips and you're making it all work, those are the people whose blood, sweat, and tears get poured into something like this. And it, I would imagine, feels like it all has gone for naught in a lot of cases, but that's in no way the case. I mean, we know the enjoyment that minor league baseball brings to millions, tens of millions of people across the country year after year. And Bakersfield, which I didn't know until this week, is the 9th largest city in California. So the amount of people who have filed into that ballpark over the last 8 decades is incredible. But for the front office staff, at least from my vantage point, that's who this comes down to. And what has that been like for you guys as, you know, kind of a grieving family at this stage, to share that amongst each other? And in minor league baseball, shared suffering is your existence. Pulling the tarp, cleaning up the concourses, all that stuff is your existence. But this takes that to an entirely different level.
Yeah, this that shared suffering remark is so well put. I don't know that I could really phrase it better myself. I've spent the last couple of days really just thinking about all the people on the front office that have come through here in my 6 seasons with the baseball team, and just whether it's full-time staffers or interns or whatever. And heck, you know, I think the person that's most impacted by this is our official scorer, Tim Wheeler, who everybody in the California League knows, and I'm betting a lot of folks back at BAM are well aware of Tim. He's been out here for over 2 straight decades scoring games at Sam Lynn Ballpark. I mean, he's as great a fixture here as anybody, including our program salesman, Froggy, who's also kind of a national treasure that a lot of people know about Froggy, too. But, yeah, I mean, that is the hard part. I can't get into, unfortunately, too much of the details on kind of how everything's wrapping up, but the team is likely changing hands, so everybody on the front office staff will indeed be looking for other things to do. We're fortunate enough out here to be under the ownership umbrella group of the Elmore Sports Group, so there may be some opportunities for, hopefully at least, some of our staffers to find other positions within that group. But for those of us who have sort of to take a line out of Taken, I guess, a more specific set of skills, and want to do something like, for me, broadcasting, spots are few and far between. So it is a tough time indeed. I don't know. I think the best way to describe this week has been just kind of putting our heads down, and it might really sink in after our last regular season home game on Sunday the 28th, when the team goes out on the road and everybody realizes there ain't a whole lot left to do at that point besides fire sale out here. It's time to get rid of some stuff, and then you kind of stare down the barrel at the ending, and it hits you. I'll admit, guys, that when I heard this news, it made me way, way more upset than I thought it would, and I have already cried about it. I didn't know that would happen, and it did, and I think, like you said, shared suffering, just so many hours poured into this place, and I just pray that it doesn't disappear, that people will, here locally in particular, remember everything that happened at this ballpark for 75 years and appreciate it. And maybe someday Bakersfield will kind of get its act together and get a ballpark and get baseball back.
And there seems to be at least one rallying point here in this last 2 weeks of the regular season anyways. Blaze currently are 3 games ahead for the second half total in the California League North Division, 3 games ahead of Visalia. How much is that a rallying point? You know, the chance to have more baseball. Is there any kind of rallying point in the community to try to get out to these last few regular season games? What about the team? I mean, you know, they're all Mariners prospects. They're going to go somewhere else. But how much are they tied into that to get one final playoff push for the team, for the city of Bakersfield?
Well, I think from a city standpoint, you're definitely seeing people come out that haven't been out in a while. We posted the article that you guys put together at MILB on the realignment on our Facebook page, the Blaze page, and I think it might be the most well-trafficked story that we have ever posted on our Facebook page. So that, I think, is a good indicator that it's been a wake-up call. And I don't know how much the people here locally are concerned about a playoff run. I think they are, again, thinking a little more short-term, and certainly, as we present it to them, we are presenting it as this is the last regular season homestand and you really ought to come out now, because of kind of flip-flopping and how the last few weeks of the season might turn out, we don't know if our playoff game is going to be happening at all, and we don't know if it's going to be happening on Wednesday or Thursday and Friday potentially of next week. So it's easier, I think, to just kind of remind people, hey, this is really your last chance where we know what day the games are happening. We know what promotions are coming up, so, you know, don't wait another week. Haven't we been down this road for 22 years? Stop waiting. Just come to a game because you're really going to miss it. On the team side, I've actually seen more rallying than I expected, and that's not to take anything away from the guys. I didn't know that they would end up caring as much about the end of a ballpark where a lot of them have only been for a couple of months, some of them maybe for a year and change. But I do think that actually it comes back to our manager, Eddie Menchaca, who also managed some of these players, in fact, in High Desert when the Mariners were an affiliate out there 2 years ago. So he's been at both stadiums that are leaving the California League, and a couple of the players have as well. And I think having that almost as like planting the seed on the inside, guys able to say, hey, this is history, let's be a part of it, they're playing their tails off, and it seems like every single game is decided in the last 2 innings. So, you know, at the very least, we're certainly in for some interesting baseball, and I would love to see a Bakersfield High Desert Finals where at least somebody gets to pack up all their stuff and put a trophy in the bag.
That is still out there and a possibility for not just the Bakersfield Blaze, but the High Desert Mavericks as well. One thing that really stuck out to me this week, on the day that this news was announced, Blaze pitcher Tyler Pike tweeted a picture with the hashtag BlazeWin of the front of the Bakersfield home dugout, and some cups had been pushed into the chain link that said, "We is Blaze." And I thought that was really cool and really poignant, because like you said, for a lot of these guys, you move on, you play in a different city every year, but to see the way they've seemingly embraced this and now to have that to play for over these last couple of weeks is really, really cool.
Yeah, I do think that they appreciate the sort of the impact that this really is. I mean, this is really massive, and I hope that everybody else gathers that as well. This is a ballpark that has been holding baseball since 1941. It was a founding member of the California League, and I... for that reason, I don't know that anybody really expected baseball would ever truly leave Bakersfield. And I hate to single out Tyler Pike, but he is one of those guys that has pitched in both High Desert and in Bakersfield. So I think he's a good example of someone who gets it, who sees that this is a big deal, and that he's been able to play in a couple of stadiums that have held baseball for 25 years or 75 years or whatever it is. And there's something that could be, obviously, you know, you have to get to that point, but it could be pretty amazing to go out with a championship, to make the last year at one of these places one of the most significant in its history. And I don't think it's lost on those guys. And that's been pretty cool for us here on kind of the media side with the front office, because we've been able to channel that into how we present the team locally as well. So that's been pretty neat.
The other seven teams in the 1941 California League were the Anaheim Aces, the Fresno Cardinals, the Merced Bears, the Riverside Reds, the San Bernardino Stars, the Santa Barbara Saints, and the Stockton Flyers. They joined the Bakersfield Badgers, which was an awesome name, form the California League in 1941. It was a Class C league at that stage. And 75 years later, we're going to say goodbye to the Bakersfield Blaze. But we won't say goodbye to our good friend Dan Besbris, who is on Twitter, by the way. You can find Dan there. His last name is Besbris. The Bakersfield Blaze at Bako Blaze, one of the best Twitter feeds also in minor league baseball, which has gotten very snarky over the last few days about the Mets and the Dodgers. And I like this attitude that the account's taken on. It's been great.
I gotta give a tip of the cap to Dave Gascon, our media relations guy, who's taken our Twitter to a kind of a dark place over the last couple of weeks. The story behind the Mets, I will reveal it now, is that our team's general manager, Mike Candela, is a huge, I mean, diehard, I mean, you're talking about calf tattoo Mets fan.
Okay.
He happened to be sitting right next to Dave in the press box while he was doing one of his broadcasts, and he thought, well, you know what, the heck with it. I'm just going to clobber the Mets on this broadcast because my general manager is sitting right next to me. And all he can really do is shake his head and smirk because he doesn't want to jump on the broadcast. And then he decided to take it to Twitter, too. And that's kind of how we have no actual bone to pick with the New York Mets. In fact,
you heard it here first.
Yeah, that's the story. And we tried to keep it under wraps for a little while because we figured the confusion may have been driving the story. Why on earth is this team in Bakersfield, California blasting the New York Mets? And it's just to try to mess with our general manager. So we have no problem with the Mets. But, you know, we figure we are in kind of a nothing to lose situation here now. So if you guys mess with the Bako Blaze on Twitter, we're not going to hold back anymore.
Go for it, because it's very entertaining. Go for it.
Oh, yeah, Dave's very good at Twitter trolling from the Bako Blaze account. I think we went after the Rawhide a couple nights back. He may have gone after the San Francisco Giants because
we
were playing San Jose last night. It's been pretty hilarious. I've found myself on air looking at our Twitter feed and just laughing mid batter. Dave's a wizard, man. I gotta give him a huge high five for his work on that one.
Dan Besbris is on Twitter. He is at Dan Besbris. You can listen to broadcasts for the final Bakersfield Blaze homestand and this final push toward the postseason at MILB.com, and you can catch Dan there as well. Dan, we can't thank you enough. Obviously not an easy time to hop on and grab a few minutes with us, and we know you got to run for a meeting as they kind of brief you guys on what's going on with the franchise, but we're all thinking about you and all pulling for the Blaze down this final stretch and the Mavericks as well. And thanks again for everything, and I'm sure we'll be talking again soon.
Yeah, thank you so much, gentlemen. You know, if you ever want to talk to an upcoming trophy husband, I will happily be your guy.
Well, as has been a common theme of the show today, we're going to continue discussing realignment in the California and Carolina leagues as we bring in our good pal Benjamin Hill, who joins the show to talk about things from kind of the business perspective of this move. This is a very rare move in minor league baseball for a couple of teams to be contracted from one league added to another. And Ben, just kind of give us the breakdown from your perspective of this. I mean, what this ultimately comes down to is business decisions in the California League and the Carolina League. There are ballpark situations that were deemed untenable in California. California. There was a vacant ballpark in the Carolina League in Granger Stadium. That is a fantastic facility, given its age especially, and a market as it appears in Fayetteville. It looks like it could be a fertile ground for the Carolina League. Just kind of give us the synopsis of what this means from the business side.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors at play here, and in the decade that I've been covering minor league baseball in some capacity, never had a story probably this momentous in terms of the parties involved and, two teams ceasing operations and two more being added. There's a lot to break down. I think first and foremost, what this comes down to is the state of California and how they have not been able to get – the whole state has no access to public funds for – minor league baseball facilities and projects of that nature. And through the years, we've seen that scuttle a lot of potential ballparks. There was the whole when Padres ownership wanted to bring their AAA club to Escondido, and then they played in Tucson temporarily, and that team eventually finally became El Paso. But there was no ballpark in Escondido because of funding issues. Obviously, Bakersfield playing in a facility that was built in the 40s. There have been so many plans to get them into a new stadium, because Bakersfield as a market would be one of the strongest markets in minor league baseball. It's not a issue of these communities not being able to support a team based on the demographics of the community. A lot of it comes down to stadiums, and I think that's really where this all begins, is that the California League tried for years in various capacities to get new stadiums and could not, and you had Bakersfield playing in Sam Lim, which is, by the way, one of my favorite places that I've ever visited, a park that goes back to the 40s, that has a dedicated front office staff, that has the kind of charm and eccentricity and just general good vibes that I love on my road trips. But from, if you're going to evaluate it from a player development standpoint and from the crowds they were drawing based in comparison to the size of the market, it was clearly an untenable situation. So Bakersfield has been kind of on the proverbial chopping block for years. And High Desert, too, not for as long a time, but when Dave Heller and Main Street Baseball ownership got in a very public spat prior to this season, in which there was a disagreement about their lease agreement with the city, which was set in stone, but the city said we prefer not to follow these terms, and attempted to even lock the team out before the start of the season. So when you have public acrimony there, and High Desert, they play in Adelanto specifically. That was not a very good ballpark situation either, even in the best of circumstances. And then when you have that level of discord surrounding it, it kind of became like we cannot have Bakersfield and High Desert, in this league in perpetuity, because these are not situations that really meet the requirements of minor league baseball from a variety of factors. So I think the real need was in California to need new facilities, and because that wasn't happening, then you have simultaneously Carolina and Marks in the Carolina League, which are much more amenable and have more resources to build those facilities, and in the form of the Rangers moving to Kinston and likely the Astros moving to Fayetteville, that's not set in stone. You also have Texas teams that would rather be closer to the east than on the west, so it works for them. And the Carolina, throughout the North and South Carolina, it's just a great place for baseball and a lot of great environments. And Kinston is Granger Stadium, another place that has a lot of history. And so the Rangers High A affiliate can move right in, and still to be determined where the second team's going to be. But as I said, we're looking at Fayetteville, who last hosted baseball in the form of the Cape Fear Crocs. And if you remember
Cape
our
Fear Crocs,
episode,
Cape Fear Crocs.
Yeah. Cape Fear Crocs, a classic theme song, and J.P. Riddle Stadium is where that team played, and that's currently the home of the Swamp Dogs, a collegiate woodbat team.
And you mentioned Kinston in there. You said you visited Kinston in the past, back when there was a team there. What was the minor league experience like? How did Granger Stadium kind of work as a stadium then, and what do you kind of anticipate for this move when the Rangers do move in to that market?
Well, they haven't had affiliated baseball since 2011, and that was when I visited the Kinston Indians in the Carolina League. And that club, after the 2011 season, moved to Zebulon and became the Mudcats, while the pre-existing Carolina Mudcats, who were then AA, moved to Pensacola. I hope everyone's
taking
notes.
Yeah, that was a very confusing thing.
Everybody's got their maps, their strings.
Yeah. Move them around like on Risk. You have to move your little pieces places to dominate the world of minor league baseball.
Yeah, exactly. And at first, I just thought you said like
it's like a bris.
And I was like, I don't really see the don't really see. Except two teams did get cut in this whole scenario. Anyway, when I was in Kinston at Granger, this is a stadium built in 1929 and in a market that only had, of course, a drawing from surrounding communities, but the town of Kinston has less than 22,000 people in it. So it's kind of funny that the Rangers are moving across the country to get to a stadium in a very small market that was built in 1949. But it's in good shape. You know, it's closer geographically for the Rangers' long-term needs. I've heard no talk about, you know, long-term building a stadium to replace Granger. You know, maybe that'll be dealt with down the line. But it's in good shape. It has a lot of history. And from a fan perspective, I think you have to be happy that Kinston is back. As much as it's sad to lose Bakersfield and High Desert, you have to be happy Kinston is back, a place that has a lot of history. You know, in addition to, you know, Carolina League baseball through the decades, they hosted Negro League teams in the 40s and 50s. I met some of their alumni when I was there in 2011. And the kind of ballpark, you know, they just don't build them like that anymore. And Tyler, you know, you spent ample time in Kinston and I believe called one of the longest games in minor league baseball history there. So you know, it's a place with a lot of memories and a lot of history, and I'm happy to see it back for that reason.
I mean, it really is a homecoming for the Carolina League, and it's a city and a ballpark and a franchise that have had a lot of history in the league, and the league has had a lot of history in Kinston. But it also brings into the equation where the other piece comes into play in the Carolina League, because as of right now, the suggestions are Fayetteville, North Carolina will be the home for the other franchise that has been contracted from the California League, and a new ballpark will be built there to begin play in 2019, with the Houston Astros being the parent club of that team. Now, we don't know any of that for sure. None of that has been officially announced. That's all, as of this stage, just kind of some speculation that has not been confirmed. But even if that is the case, let's say all of those dominoes do fall together, that leaves at least 2017 and 2018 where we don't know where this Fayetteville franchise will be playing. There's been some discussion. Maybe they'll play at Granger Stadium, which, again, is a great facility. For a long time was named the best field in the Carolina League. So, I mean, the drainage is good. The playing surface is good. But it's also a, you know, an 80-year-old facility, basically, at this stage, 70 years old. Can it handle 140 games over the course of 150 days in the summer? So there are still a lot of question marks surrounding all of this. All we know is that two teams will be playing in the Carolina League that weren't there in 2016. One of those will be in Kinston. We know that for certain.
Yeah, and Fayetteville is a strong front runner for the other. And the Astros are very much on the record as saying, you know, this is something we're working toward. It's not a backroom behind the scenes thing.
Right.
The Astros want to bring a team to Fayetteville. I talked to Astros president Reed Ryan last week, and, you know, he said, absolutely, this is what we're trying to do. This, you know, quote, checks off a boxes for us in terms of where it's, you know, where it's situated in the national landscape as regards their farm system, in terms of having a new facility, in terms of being close to their new spring training facility, or comparatively close. And the Astros are working with the city of Fayetteville, and the city of Fayetteville last week, I believe, approved a memorandum of understanding. And when you're going through the kind of sometimes torturously slow city government process, as it should be slow because you're dealing with a lot of money here, a memorandum of understanding is not official approval, but it's kind of like an agreement to move forward. It's kind of like we got engaged, but we're not married yet kind of thing. So they've taken major steps to get this far, and Fayetteville's very much the front runner, and the Astros are very much committed to the process of bringing that team to Fayetteville. And everything else, it's kind of like, let's take care of that first and then see what happens. And we'll all have plenty more to talk about down the line.
Yeah, definitely. I want to pivot, and it's not, it's something you wrote this week, but again, it's about something next year. This week's Pro Watch, you talked about how the Salem Kaiser Volcanoes in August of 2017 are going to try to use an eclipse to their advantage in a promotion. How's that going to kind of work and come together?
Yeah, this is so cool. Salem Kaiser, who play in Oregon. Salem Kaiser, the Volcanoes, the Class A short season affiliate of the San Francisco Giants. They usually, when I'm writing Promo Watch or writing about promos or tweeting about promos or dreaming about promos, they're ones that have just taken place or are about to take place. I think this is the first time I've led a column off of something that is taking place literally a year from now. But I learned a lot in writing this, and I really became very excited about this idea. August 21st, 2017, there is going to be a solar eclipse, and it's the first coast-to-coast eclipse in the United States since 1918. So it'll be 99 years, that the first time there's been a solar eclipse across the country. And as an eclipse moves across the country, there is the so-called path of totality, which is a roughly 60-mile-wide band in which, you know, the eclipse will be a total eclipse. That's where you experience it. So, you know, eclipse aficionados, of which there are many, you know, the hotel rooms and camping sites and whatever have you, are all fully booked, not just a year in advance, but they've been booked for years and already in some cases, to get in the path of totality for this eclipse and experience it to the fullest. Salem Kaiser is in the path of totality, and since the solar eclipse obviously starts on the west and makes its way east, you know, it's in the morning, a little after 10 a.m., I believe, that the eclipse will occur in the Salem Kaiser area. So the team has announced a morning game, and they haven't set the start time, but it'll be somewhere around 9 or 9:30, with a built-in eclipse delay in the game. And all the players on the field, as well as all the fans, they'll get commemorative glasses. They can stare at the sun during this delay and watch, you know, near total darkness come in. And this really surreal communal experience of being in a ball game, stopping it in the middle, or, you know, probably be in the second or third inning or so, and experiencing the eclipse. And then probably within 15 or 20 minutes, there'll be enough light, you know, as long as there's not some sort of apocalyptic event or something like that, you never know. But usually normalcy will return in about 15 minutes, and then they can get on with the game. And this is the culmination of what they're calling Eclipse Fest, which is going to be a whole weekend of events. They're having a beer and wine fest, and they'll serve breakfast at the ballpark the day of the eclipse. And I was told they might open up their parking lot for RVs because all the hotel rooms already booked in the area. And just a really cool way to take advantage of a very unique you know, natural phenomenon that's occurring. And I became very interested in the path of totality in researching this promo. And one, it's the 10th album by Korn, Path of Totality. So Google Path of Totality, and there you go.
That's it Korn is with a K for all the kids listening.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah, and that's kids with a K.
Kids with a K.
1-877 cars for kids.
Yeah, and Korn, you know, to go on a brief tangent, they were part of a genre of rock that I always despise.
Yeah, same.
Always will despise. But anyway, Path of Totality, credit to Korn, and you know, for coming up with a great album name, their 10th LP. And the Path of Totality, as it moves across the country, will also be in some other minor league markets later in the day, including Bowling Green and Nashville and several in South Carolina, such as Columbia and Charleston and Greenville. So I'm trying to tell these teams, I mean, they don't necessarily listen to me, but I'm trying to tell them, if you have a home game on August 21st and you're in the Path of Totality, do your own eclipse promotion. I mean, that's awesome, right? I think it's really cool. I'm totally on board with this idea. This is the most excited I've ever been about an eclipse.
No, this really is a really cool idea. I'm hoping from the, you know, the baseball nerd standpoint, I'm hoping that at the on the stats side at MLB Advanced Media, I hope that by next year they have put something into the system that allows a delay to be listed in parentheses for eclipse. Because now it can be, you know, delay rain, delay lighting, delay in inclement weather, wet field, whatever. I hope eclipse comes up next year on, you know, game day, and the box scores is the reason behind that. I know it's a big pressing issue.
It is. I think that's pretty much the most important aspect of everything we've talked about so far. Thank you, Tyler, as usual, for always bringing it
up. Always got my finger on the button, man. Always got my finger on the eclipse button. Ben, another...
To blow it up?
to initiate the path of totality. That's really actually, it sounds like what they would have deemed, like had the Independence Day attack happened in real life, it sounds like what they would have deemed that. Like when they just blow up cities, it was in the whole path of totality from those big green guns. I think that's what the terminology would have been. Moving on, Mascot Mania is currently underway on the site. Have you gentlemen been voting? You can vote for your favorite mascots in all of minor league baseball. It is an election year, by the way. East region, South region, Midwest region, and the West region. I as we started our call today, I logged on to start voting, and I've pretty much been doing it the entire time since.
Yeah, you know, I try to keep my preferences close to the vest because my official stance here in the world of MILB is that I love everything equally, and that includes all mascots. But, you know, Danny Wilde, Twitterless Danny Wilde, as I call him, author of Minoring in Twitter and beloved MILB.com colleague, he wrote the story kind of introducing Mascot Mania and solicited me for a few quotes. So I gave some of my favorites within that quote, including Shelley in Modesto. You know, she is a pistachio and a new addition to their nut lineup of mascots. Because they are the Modesto Nuts. And when I visited Modesto, Shelley took my notebook and wrote, "I love you."
Aww.
And I think I fell in love with her, too.
She is very pretty.
I feel a little weird that I have feelings She's now for a mascot, and that totally is coloring my my unbiased or allegedly unbiased perspective. And on a broader scale, you know, hey, call me a social justice warrior, but why are mascots default male?
Yeah, that's true.
We need more female mascots.
That's a good point.
And
that's a very good point.
I'm casting my vote for Shelley every time she comes up in the randomized mascot matchups. In that article, too, I gave a shout-out to Hornsby, and I said, like Bruce before him, he has the range. And I don't think anyone got that joke, but I'm still proud I can sneak it into an article because Bruce Hornsby, you know, his band was the range. Nobody?
Nope.
No.
You don't even remember who Bruce Not Hornsby was?
No.
See? And yet I get these jokes in for public consumption all the time.
I did appreciate your total eclipse.
Yeah, that was good. That was good for the Salem Kaiser thing, the headline to that.
Yeah, yeah. it felt a little obvious to me, but, you know, I couldn't.
I will not be as impartial as Ben. My favorite mascot in minor league baseball is the Winston-Salem Dashes Bolt, and Bolt is currently 33rd in the South region, which is just – debilitating to my mood today. I love Bold.
Man, I'm sorry these things affect you on such a deep emotion.
I considered buying Bolt stuffed toys for my unborn children back when I worked in the Carolina League like 5-6 years ago, and they are still unborn. So I didn't waste money, but I would have had Bolt just still sitting around my house waiting for one day, should I for some reason find a lady who decides that it's good to have children with me, then I would have had Bolt, but I don't. So a double sadness.
So Tyler's apartment is just a shrine to his perpetually unborn children.
It's just nothing but sad, lonely stuffed animals for hanging out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, man. Benjamin Hill is on Twitter. He's at Ben's Biz. This has been a packed week of news from around the world of the business of minor league baseball. And some cool promos coming up as well. That stuff is up on the site right now, and you can check out the blog all the time, too, bensbiz.mlblogs.com, and go put on that Korn album, Ben. We'll talk to you next week after you're done imbibing the entire Korn catalog.
Well, I'm not doing the whole catalog, but I think Path of Totality, I might check that one out because, you know, I try to be open-minded. I wrote off Korn a long time ago.
Maybe you like them now.
Enough to name an album of Path of Totality, I think they might just be the band for
Shot.
Me. At least that album, you know, it eclipses all.
Thanks, Finn.
Yeah.
Finishing up episode, what do we decide this is? 73? Is that 73. What it is? 73 of the Show Before the Show podcast. Again, you can find Dan Bespris on Twitter. He's at Dan, B-E-S-B-R-I-S. The Bakersfield Blaze are at Bako Blaze. One of the most entertaining follows in minor league baseball, and you might only get a couple more weeks. I don't know. Maybe somebody will just take the password, keep the account open, and just tweet satirically. I think that would be very entertaining.
That would be great. Just tweet as if the Blaze were still playing. And just like have perpetual 3-game series with High Desert.
Yeah, exactly. Just make play up. Ad infinitum, as yeah. they say. Nobody says that. I just made that. People don't say that in conversation. I don't know. I just refer to it as they say. Anyway, Sam and I are going to go united on our MILB TV picks for this week. Now, the reason we're going to give you picks for a series coming up next week is I'm actually going to be leaving the country for a few days. Sam and I are going to record next week's show on Tuesday, but this series starts on Tuesday. Sam, tell all the folks what we're talking about.
Yeah, so if you want to get your chance to see the Bakersfield Blaze, you know, you want to see what they're all about, just you want to see a team that is rallying for a playoff spot. They're actually going to be playing in a MILB TV market at San Jose next Tuesday. So starting August 30th, uh, August 30, 30th, 31st, and September 1st. So that's Tuesday through Thursday. A three-game set at San Jose. That'll be on MILB.TV. You know, you get a chance to root for a team that's, you know, fighting against the dying of the light. You know, you heard Dan say that this is a team that is actually rallying, you know, that's not just some perceived storyline that we're trying to make up here. He can see it in the club. You can see it for yourself. If you're in Bakersfield yourself, please go out to a game beforehand. Don't take our advice and wait for it to be on MILB TV. If you have a subscription, great, you know, do both. But, you know, if you're in the area, please go see a Blaze game live. And then for the rest of you, go watch them next week take on San Jose as they try to push for those Cal League playoffs.
So that is on tap. And by the way, San Jose, the only Cal League team on MILB TV. So you can catch it's kind of a rare beast. You can catch some Cal League games on MILB TV.
Yeah.
Which is a whole ton of fun. But we'll be back next week to talk about the start to the 2016 postseason, as it will appear. We'll have most things decided. I shouldn't say most things. We'll have a lot of those spots spoken for as of next week. So that'll be fun. Then I think we're going to have to do our second international podcast, which will be good the week after that.
Our second annual international.
Second annual international podcast.
Where we both freak out at the fact that we're talking instantaneously over a series
of tubes.
We
can talk over the internet. It's amazing.
Are you sure you're in South Korea? Yes, I'm quite sure.
So that'll be coming up here in a couple of weeks as well as the playoffs approach closer and closer every single day. And again, big thanks to Dan from Bakersfield, and send a kind note to the people in Bakersfield and in High Desert. And also, if you're in Kinston, if you're in Fayetteville, you can get a Baseball is Back in Kinston t-shirt up on KinstonBaseball.com right now, which I think is super cool. Get excited because you've got some really fun nights coming up ahead as well for you. And the 2017 season, not that far off because the 2016 playoffs are coming up real quick, and we'll discuss those and a whole lot more when we return next week for episode number 74 of the Show Before the Show podcast. Talk to you then. Bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.